Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 132 of Growth Marketing Today. My name is Ramley John, your host, and I have somebody special for you today. It's Amanda Natividad. She is the head of marketing at the agency Growth Machine. Now, according to MailChimp, the average email open rate for all industries they've analyzed is about 21%. That means that for every 100 emails you send, only about 21 people open it. Now, Growth Machine's newsletter open rate is almost double that at 40%. And in this episode, Amanda, the head of marketing there at Growth Machine, reveals five email techniques that contributed to that amazing results. So in episode 132, you'll learn first five techniques Amanda used to increase the open rate of Growth Machine's newsletter to 40%. Second, how Amanda repurposes podcast episodes as blog posts. And third, why is Growth Machine doubling down on YouTube content? Now, before we jump in, I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why listen to this and then like figure out what that five email techniques are and then write it down when you can just steal my notes? You can go to growthtoday.fm/132 to get it now, or you can find the link in the description of the show. Heads up. Get it now, because when I publish next week's episode, this week's cheat sheet will be gone. So hurry. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts like Amanda on this show. Thanks to LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is an undiscovered goldmine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive criteria that you will not find anywhere else, such as company growth rate, job seniority, job titles, skills, and more. So whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, and build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. Now, for you, my listeners, you get $100 free credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. Get it for free at linkedin.com/growth today. Well, enough about me. Let's jump into my chat with Amanda. All right. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to have Amanda here finally. She is the head of marketing at Growth Machine. And we're going to be talking all about what she's been, the cool stuff that she's been doing at Growth Machine. How's it going, Amanda? How are things with you?
I'm good. How are you?
Super excited. Before we get started talking about marketing and what you're doing at Growth Machine, I love to just warm things up, maybe for people to get to know, ask you what you like to do. And you said cooking and baking. And if people follow you on Twitter, which they should, you do a lot of tweets for recipes, I noticed. So I'm curious, why cooking and baking, and what's your favorite dish to make?
Yeah, so I've kind of always loved cooking and baking. And, you know, many years ago when I had my quarter life crisis, I decided to go to culinary school. So I went to Le Cordon Bleu because I don't know what I wanted at the time. I think it was maybe to be a chef, maybe to be a food writer. But I also thought, you know, if nothing else, I will build a lifelong skill that can benefit me forever. So I think what I really like about cooking and baking is just kind of that immediate gratification where you're doing something real time with your hands, not staring at a screen, and then you get the output pretty much right away, which is pretty fun. And I think like one of my favorite things to make, I mean, it changes all the time. I'll kind of go through phases, but I think I just really like making one pot or one pan meals, like just kind of using the least amount of cookware as possible and getting the most out of what you have in front of you.
Fascinating. I've been cooking a lot during the pandemic. That's like because some people got into gardening. I got into cooking. So I've been making burritos and other weird stuff. So.
You've been making Philly cheesesteaks too.
I did. I made that one time. Yeah. It was pretty good. I was shocked. Yeah. And I made this really great, I love fried chicken. So I've been tweaking my fried chicken recipe. So,
ooh, yum.
I think you were right there. You also, it's a great way to pull away from the computer, especially as digital marketers. It's really important to do something outside of computers. I want to switch gears and let's talk about marketing. You've been head of marketing at Growth Machine now for 9 months, I believe, and you pretty much you're pretty much taking over and revamped their content strategy. It looks like your email newsletter, the podcast, now a YouTube channel, which we're going to talk about because you're doing some cool stuff there. So far, what's been your most proud accomplishment since you started?
Yeah. I think about it, like when I joined Growth Machine, the things that were really exciting to me were, you know, as an SEO driven content creation agency, you know, a lot of the people on the team, or pretty much everybody on the team, is some kind of content creator, whether they have an Instagram following or a blog with a huge following. So it's really nice to join this shared culture of creators where, you know, creating content is, it's not seen as this cost center in our company, even. It's what we do. So I've been lucky to have that kind of support from people who are, you know, who respect the content that I'm creating and understand the value that it brings. So I would say, though, that some of the accomplishments that I'm most proud of are our podcast and our email. So our podcast, which we relaunched in September. So this was, I think, after about three-ish months after I joined, we relaunched the podcast, and downloads have nearly doubled since I took over, which is satisfying to see because I just thought this would grow a lot more slower, a lot more steadily. And we've had over 15,000 unique downloads. So that's been pretty exciting. And then the other one is email. I mean, I think it's, you know, maybe on one hand, that's kind of a boring answer, but it remains, you know, a really healthy and viable channel for us. And then I also relaunched the newsletter into a new format about 2 weeks ago. So still pretty early days, but the thing I've been doing differently is, rather than kind of teasing a blog post and then linking to that, I've been focusing on standalone insights on content. So it's more encompassing of what we're doing with the podcast, on the blog, and with YouTube, and distilling things into standalone insights so that if you click into the newsletter and read it, you'll get something useful or insightful or tactical, but you can also click through and learn more about the given topic. So you've been getting, you know, open rates right now are about the same, but, you know, we've been getting more responses from people saying, hey, I like this new format. This works well for me, which is great. And then I also created this welcome sequence to showcase some of our best content. And this sequence now has a 40% open rate, which is pretty exciting for us.
Those are some really great accomplishments for the last few months that you just started there. That's really awesome. I want to go back to the beginning when you first started. We're going to dig into how you were able to accomplish those podcast metrics and those email stuff. But in the beginning, when you first started, was everything great? Like, I'm imagining Growth Machine, you said content is their thing, right? They do that. Was everything a mess, or like you came in, what did it look like? Like, were you excited to revamp everything, or was there just like minor tweaks that you wanted to do from the beginning?
That's a good question. I mean, I would say that where I was very fortunate was to come into a position where the company, you know, I feel like has a strong brand or has a strong foundation where, you know, we're a smaller boutique agency, but, you know, with our founder, Nat Eliason, we're a really good agency. We do great work for our clients. We do proven great work. The content that he had been creating was also very high quality. It was just that, you know, for the role that he was in, you know, at the time he was the CEO, he didn't have a lot of time to create content for Growth Machine. So there's nothing that was broken or messy per se. It was more just, how can we get back into a more frequent cadence of publishing? So when I first joined, I think he was publishing on the blog. It was kind of just when he had time. So it was like a couple times a month or once a month or so. And then there was no newsletter in place. It was in place, but it wasn't being sent. And Nat was posting on social media when he was able to. So a lot of it was just operationalizing what we had in place. So getting the blog up and going. So we got into a cadence of publishing once a week or so, getting the email newsletter back up and running. So that goes out once a week now, relaunching the podcast. And then, you know, more recently, relaunching the YouTube channel.
That's a lot of things. I imagine, you know, I was like, man, there's so much opportunities when you started. Like, the newsletter wasn't getting sent as often. There wasn't a lot of blog happening. Where did you know to focus on first? I think that's a very, very important topic about marketers is prioritizing. Because like we can go in a deep end and just like do a little bit of each, not really well. But I'm curious, like, how do you decide to work what to work on first and why?
I would say that a lot of it had, I mean, it came down to figuring out the right balance between what the business actually needs and where my greatest strengths are. So at the time that I joined, you know, we were getting a lot of inbound leads just like through word of mouth and through our own networks. So there wasn't really like a lead generation problem. And at the same time, you know, my career history is more so in journalism, content creation, that kind of thing. So running a blog, I can do that in my sleep. Like that's something that's very easy for me. So I thought like, well, this is easy. We already have the leads coming in. We just need the content to support them or to kind of help push them to, you know, conversion. So I just start, so I focus on the blog first. I know how to do this. We already need this anyway. The infrastructure's in place. We already have a blog. So it was getting that going. The second piece was email. I just think email it's a really important channel. It's, you know, for any company, it's your only own channel in which you're able to reach people directly into their inboxes, right? Like obviously a blog is your own channel, but let's be honest, like even for the beloved blogs the beloved B2B blogs that we know, we're not going to their blogs every day and refreshing and looking for content, right? It's kind of just like when you see it pop up in your feed, you're like, oh, great, I'll go check it out. But even then, like you don't always go there. So so email is super important because you are directly going to people's inboxes. It's the opportunity. You already kind of have their eye. It's the opportunity to engage them. So I focus on that next. Also because we already had pretty good open rates to start. And so when I sent the first email, our opens were around 30%, which I was very pleasantly surprised by. I assumed it was going to be like, you know, 15% or so. But that also just really goes to show the work that Nat and team have done before I even joined. Like they already had a really nice email list that had very warm leads. So focus on that. And then next I focus on the podcast. And it was funny because Nat pretty early on was like, oh, we have a podcast. You can relaunch it if you want. And I'd never hosted before. And I was like, maybe I'll do that later. Maybe later. Like, oh yeah, I would love to, but later. And then I think it was September where he was like, you know what? Like, we have the blog going and that's great, but I think it's time to kind of ramp up and do more. So like, what do you think of launching the podcast? And I was like, okay. but it was good. It was a lot of fun. One reason we did it though, ultimately our relaunch it was because, you know, I started to think about the thing that I started to be concerned about was, the growth of our audience where, you know, we had a good lead magnet on the blog, which is like a nice, it's a blog post on Google Sheets templates. To help you as a content marketer. So that, you know, that drives in some, that grows our list pretty nicely. But I wanted to grow our audience even more. And so one way to do that is, you know, you could do guest blog posts, but it's kind of hard to ask someone to write a guest blog post for you. Like it's like giving someone homework where they don't even go to your school. so then it became like, well, it's a lot easier to ask someone to join a podcast because it's easier to ask for someone's, you know, 1 hour of their time versus like, I don't know how long it takes someone to write a guest post, 4 hours, 6 hours. And it became this kind of scalable way to tap into other people's audiences. So that was one piece. The second piece was, the repurposing you can do with a podcast episode. So now what we do is each of our podcasts, or as many as we can, we'll try to create at least one to two blog posts based on a key idea in that given episode. So one blog post I'm coming out with today is about viral loops. And this was inspired by an episode we did with Amanda Goetz, a former VP of marketing at The Knot, and now CMO at Teal and founder of House of Wise. She talked about this notion of viral loops. And so we, you know, did a full blog post just on that and like how to do it, like what it is, how to do it, and all that good stuff.
I have so much, so many follow-up questions.
Yeah, sorry,
to that.
I kind of rambled there.
No, it's good. This is how we structure discussions. Is like you kind of laid out the path or foundation of what we're gonna talk about next, based on what you answered there. The first, let's talk about email, and then we'll go to podcasts. You revamp email. First of all, 30% open rate. Like, what the heck? let's talk about that. Like, how, why have you figured out, are you guys cleaning the list consistently? Like, what's your secret that you saw that Nat and the team is doing really well, that the open rate is so freaking high for the industry standard?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the free course that we have that Nat developed. It's like a 7-part email course on how to do SEO, or how to understand SEO, how to set up a blog. And it goes very, very step by step, like, so that once you take the course, you know exactly which managed host to use, how to launch your website, what to put on it, how to structure it, how to figure out some projected traffic, how to do your initial keyword research strategy, all this stuff that really walks you through the initial SEO steps. Where, you know, I think SEO is still this area where it's still very much a black box for a lot of marketers. You know, it's why we have so many SEO agencies. It's something that is notoriously difficult to learn for a number of reasons. And I think part of the reason is that the barriers to entry feel really high. Like, I've asked friends who work in SEO years ago, hey, can you give me a crash course? And then right away they launch into canonical tags and black hat SEO. And I was like, I don't know what you mean. I'm a former journalist. But the free course that we have, it just really walks you through the steps in a very practical and tactical way. So I think that's part of it. And the welcome sequence we have kind of introduces people from the free course to our newsletter, so that it's not like, hey, I did a course in SEO, why is this random person named Amanda emailing me? So to kind of bridge that gap, that I think that's helped a lot. And that email, that the welcome sequence has a 40% open rate. And then also, we are mindful not to blast people too often. I think, every business is different, and I can understand that it makes sense to email your list multiple times a week, but we only do it once a week. For a while we were doing it maybe twice a week, and depending on where someone was in the welcome sequence, sometimes three times a week, but I really tried not to make it any more than that. And really focused on the quality of the content which they were receiving. And then there's also just, we don't, our email newsletter is very simple. It's like a plain text email. We'll kind of lay it out with emojis here and there if we can. But for the most part, it's simple. And we really just focus on how can we get you to open this email because we think it's really useful for you. And I think the other competitive advantage that we have is, I used to run content marketing in-house, and now by the nature of what we do at Growth Machine, our customers are people who are heads of marketing, or it's small business owners, or it's somebody who doesn't have a marketing team yet, but they want to grow their website. So I'm kind of marketing to a past version of myself, to 3 years ago in my role at Fitbit, where I was running B2B content marketing. So I think about how can I best enable that person to think about content marketing and SEO? And so for us, it's less about how to do SEO and more about why it's impactful, why you should care, how it fits into your overall marketing and business strategy.
I really love that. You're talking about, and this is, I listened to that episode, the first episode you did with Nat, and you were talking about pain, focusing on that pain. And this is kind of the stuff you're talking about right now, adding pain into email.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So you've also started revamping the email. I really love that it's mainly text. It actually kind of bothers me sometimes. Some people have pictures off when they get email. Something that I got from Val Geisler, they call her the email queen, is you want to focus on the text, right? A lot of this B2C e-commerce, everything's images. And then some people, they don't have images on, so they get nothing at all in this year. So it's great that it's text, but you've made some changes. I'm subscribed to your email, so I've seen the transformation. I'm not sure you know that. What changes have you made to the newsletter, and what was the reasoning behind it? And did you see any results based on those changes?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a couple weeks ago, you know, as recent as a couple weeks ago, our email newsletter was, you know, on Tuesdays you would send a new podcast notification email, and it would even just say in the subject line, "new podcast," and it was like, here's a new podcast episode. Here's who the guest is. Here's why you should care. Like, here's a meaningful insight. Here's a link to the episode, all that stuff. And then we also had, like, you know, an opt out that was like, oh, we still want our newsletter, but not this particular one. Cool. Click here. And then on Thursdays, we sent the sort of blog post newsletter email, which was, you know, extracting an insight in a couple short paragraphs and saying, hey, read more in the blog post. And then once we launched the YouTube channel, then it became like, well, I don't think we need a third email in a given week. Like, that might just be annoying. And then I also thought, like, you know, I am a team of one. And even though I do have some, you know, fantastic freelance resources that I work with or freelance contractors that I work with, ultimately, you know, I'm the only one producing the content. So I also thought about it like kind of selfishly, maybe, where it was, well, how can I get the most bang for my buck in terms of my output? Like, I don't think my time should go to figuring out how to send three different emails every single week. I think it's, well, what can I do to provide the most value to someone's inbox? Like, how can I sit with this email, like, at my desk for like 1 hour, however long it takes every week, and just do that one email and do it right? So then And then it was also like, well, we have so much content. Like, how can I put this all into one email? But what I didn't want to do was go, hey, look at our new YouTube show. Hey, look at our podcast. Hey, check out our blog. Have fun. Because no one wants that. I think that when you have someone's email address, you need to be really respectful of it and understand, like, okay, I have your email. This is very personal. And I want to make sure that I'm giving you something novel, insightful, useful for you in your daily job. So I decided to just repackage the email entirely. It's one email. And I'm still kind of playing around with it. But the way I'm thinking about it right now is each week is kind of an overall theme. That way it's like, so this week it's going to be about viral loops. And it's like, here's what, you know, here's what a viral loop is. Here's why you need it. Here's how you can do it. So we have a YouTube video that's not about viral loops specifically, but it has some element to it. And then we also have the Amanda Goetz podcast episode. And we also have the blog post that we're going to do derived from the episode. So it's going to be like a whole kind of 2 to 3 step email about how to do this. And then people can click into each resource if they want to do so.
Makes a lot of sense that people don't want to get three emails in 1 week. Here's our podcast. Here's our video. Here's our newsletter.
Totally. And I'm someone who subscribes to a bunch of newsletters all the time. I'm always subscribing to brand new stuff and unsubscribing to other stuff. And it's just like, and then, you know, I'm sure we're all the same way. We all probably have dozens of emails coming in at any given time. And you probably forget who the person is. You're like, why did I sign up for this list? Who is this person again? Right. So I always kind of assume like, okay, this person, even if they've been on our email list for a month, they probably don't know me. They probably don't know what Growth Machine does.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Where I think Nat was sending it from that, the newsletter, and then it switched over to Amanda. People must have been like, who's Amanda again? Like,
yeah.
How did that transition happen?
Well, it was kind of abrupt, which I would be curious what users thought, but it was kind of just like, well, now it's me. We wanted it to come from a human being. Like, there was consideration behind, like, should we just make it from Growth Machine? But ultimately it was like, I think we all kind of know that emails convert or email open rates are higher when it's coming from a human being. So we just made it Amanda at Growth Machine. Cause I figured like my last name is Natividad and that's too long. People are going to be like, what is this? So let's just like, make it super simple, Amanda at Growth Machine. And then for the first, I think it might've even been for the first like 2 months, so a long time, where I had some kind of introduction of like, oh, like I'm the head of marketing for Growth Machine, just to be like, you don't know who I am, I get it, but here's who I am. And then every email ends with an actual email signature from Amanda Natividad, head of marketing for Growth Machine. And it comes from my email address. And if you reply to it, it actually goes to my real inbox and I get the actual email. And then in the welcome sequence, because the free course that we have comes from Nat. And so the welcome sequence comes from me. And then there's a transition email that's really just, hey, you did our free course from Nat. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something useful. I want to introduce myself. My name's Amanda. I run marketing here. Please let me know what questions you might have about SEO or content. And that's really just the email to like make that transition very clear and transparent.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. I'm going to check that out. It's something that I'm actually in the process of doing as well. So that tip is very useful for me particularly. One other thing about email before we switch to podcast, do you have any tips about subject lines? I'm sure you've already written a bunch of emails already for Growth Machine and your other workplace, the place that you worked at. But what are tips? Do you have to? Some people say that you have to be hacky and add emojis and stuff. But I'm really liking how simple Growth Machine subject lines are. What is your plan or strategy to make sure that your subject lines get people to click on it and open it?
Yeah. So we actually do A/B test them pretty often. And I've tested them with emojis and non-emojis because someone told me something similar like, oh, use an emoji, it's more fun. And it is fun. But for us in our list, our open rates are lower when we use an emoji. I don't know if people just kind of see it and gloss over it and they think like, spam. Don't send me this spammy thing, just send me a real email. So maybe there's that. And I also think there's a balancing act to be had between being very transparent about what your email is and also using a little bit of clickbaitiness. So for instance, the new podcast notifications that we had, it always said in brackets, new podcast. That way, like you knew exactly what it was. And when we A/B tested this, that version always had higher open rates. And the other piece is having a subject line that will fit in the preview window of Gmail. Most people have Gmail. Not everybody does, but most people do. Making sure it fits nicely there and that subject line teases something or it says something novel, something unusual. Something I try to stay away from, and this is kind of a personal thing, is I try to kind of stay away from questions if I can. Because I say it's personal because I tend to use questions a lot when I'm in my writing and I don't think it's very effective. It's like a weird quirk I have that I do. And I'm like, I know this isn't good, but try not to do it. So I try not to do it unless I actually think it's a really interesting subject line. But I try to make it like there's something about your marketing and you don't know what it is, or like content has four goals and they're not what you think, or things like that. That's like, oh, like I didn't know that. To try to get people to open, but also just in the actual email, delivering on it. Like the thing that I avoid doing is teasing something and then not answering it. Like one recent example was a podcast episode we had with Kristen LaFrance, head of resilient retail for Shopify. We had this whole conversation in our podcast about like, there's one touch point in the entire customer journey that has a 100% open rate. It was such a great quotable line. And I used that in the subject line of the email that was like, there's only one touch point in your customer journey with 100% open rate. And then I answered that question in the email. There's a case to be made that I should have just been like, oh, you're not going to know what it is. Like you should listen to the episode. Maybe you'll find out. And there's maybe that would have worked, but if I read that, I would be annoyed. I would be like, just tell me what it is. And then I'll listen. Like, don't tease me too much, just a little bit. So then I answered it in the email. Like in the email, I think the first line was, it's not your email. It's the box that's delivered that has a 100% open rate. Learn more about this topic in this podcast episode.
I love that. I love that you're not dangling a piece of carrot, right? Like, I think some people are smart enough to say, hey, this might get me to click, but I don't feel good about it, right? It's not something that I feel ethical about. When we come back in just a moment, Amanda shares the one campaign that she's most proud of during her time at Fitbit. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is an undiscovered gold mine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive and specific criteria that you won't find anywhere else, such as company growth rates, so you can reach fast-growing organizations, job seniorities, so you can target the decision makers and close deals quicker, job titles, so you can focus your advertising specific to your ideal customer profile, member skills, so you can find people with very specific skills and qualifications, and more. That's LinkedIn's competitive advantage. It's the world's largest professional networking site. LinkedIn allows you to reach more than 90 million senior level influencers, 62 million decision makers, and 10 million C-suite members. No other advertising platform can offer you that. And it's one of the many reasons why more than 78% of B2B marketers rate LinkedIn as the most effective social media platform at helping their organization achieve specific objectives. Whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, or build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals quicker. So do business where business is done. Get a free $100 advertising credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign at linkedin.com/growth today, or find that link in the description. Well, enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Amanda. I want to switch gears now to podcasting. Thank you for all your tips about email. But for podcasting, one thing you mentioned is about repurposing a podcast. It's a great idea. A lot of podcasters suggest it as well. But in practice, when you get it, when you send it over to somebody to repurpose, what you get is something just bad, just a bad article. I'm curious, how do you, like, you gave that example with Amanda Getz with, you know, creating a whole blog post about viral loops. Like, how does it not turn into, how do you repurpose it so it's not just like a transcript essentially, but like, yeah. what is how do you make sure that the content writer that you're working with doesn't just regurgitate the information already in the talk itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really interesting point, because it's really easy to fall into that trap of just kind of regurgitating a transcript, which arguably could be valuable depending on what you're doing. But the way I like to think about it is each asset should be standalone. Like, the person reading this blog post about viral loops, they should be able to fully understand what this means, get value out of it without having to listen to the podcast episode. And I really firmly believe that, because I believe if you are actually delivering the value, delivering the insights that's brand new to somebody, then they're going to trust you. Then they're going to be like, oh, there's got to be more in this episode, something else that I'm going to learn. I have to listen to this. Rather than kind of glossing over high level, here are the 10 topics we generally spoke about. I think homing in on one and really fleshing that out, really giving that a lot of concrete detail, a lot of backup, will ultimately, you know, win over your audience. So we'll use quotes from the podcast guest as supporting points. And we'll fully, you know, link to the podcast episode and say like, oh, learn more about this here in this episode, or in this episode, we talked about this thing. Here's more about that thing. And then in working with the writers, fully transparently, we do have a really great freelance writer who does a lot of these posts for us. She and I will work together on the headline up front, where, you know, it usually just comes from like, I know the episode's best because it's my show, but like, I remember the viral loop thing from Amanda's episode. And so I reached out to our contractor and was like, hey, we had this really good tangent around 22 minutes in about viral loops. Can you do a whole blog post just about this piece? And then she will do the research and she'll make sure that it has all the relevant information. And then we also run a clear scope report on the content we're creating to make sure we can compare it against the top ranking content about that topic, and to make sure that we're covering all the important pieces of information that should be.
That makes a lot of sense. And for that freelance writer, do you just give the headline and she does her own thing, or like
pretty much. Yeah,
what?
Pretty much.
I mean, like, that's really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, we might, like, well, you know, I might change the headline, like,
right,
tweak it, but like, it's basically the right same. Like, the headline, I'll be like, oh, working headline is how to create viral loops, and then I might kind of add something about retention marketing later on. But yeah.
Oh, no outline, no nothing. They figured that out on their own.
No, she is fantastic, and don't steal her.
She, I know it's probably your best kept secret. You're not gonna just pass that off.
No, I mean her byline is on the blog post, so you
that's
know
funny.
You could don't steal her, but you know.
Yeah, I'm just joking. No, for sure. Thank you so much for sharing that. It makes a lot of sense. I want to shift gears one last time, actually two more times. So first, let's talk about YouTube. You've started posting up YouTube. I'm curious what the reason is. Like, you know, obviously YouTube is one of the second biggest search engine next to Google, but what's the thought process behind Quick Machine, revamping or creating a YouTube channel?
Yeah. So it kind of started with a couple of people asking us, if we do YouTube strategy. It kind of planted the seed. And then last fall, Nat Eliason was thinking about, he launched his own YouTube channel and was like, I want to do this thing. And so, you know, he hired a contractor to help him with that. And then as we were thinking about whether or not we would offer this as a growth machine service, we also thought like, well, if we offer this, we should have our own channel. It would be weird to sell this service and not even have ourselves as a client. So we thought like, okay, let's try this. Let's see what this would look like for, you know, what this looks like for us. So we launched our own channel to see what it looks like, but also to help us build the systems in place, the project management systems along the way, so that when we do secure a client, we already have all the back end, like all the Zap set up, everything with Airtable, Asana, all that ready to go, so that when a client says, let's do this, we can go, great, we have everything in place already. So we started that. And another reason we did it was to kind of make our content more economical, to continue to repurpose our content. I think a lot of what we have on the blog, it already lended itself well to other formats like a YouTube video. So part of it was wanting to see, hey, we really do have good content on this blog that I worry isn't getting seen enough or isn't getting shared enough. So I wanted it to be in other formats so that people could digest it in different ways.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So in terms of the topic itself, is that the main way you're finding which topic to create a video about? It's like you're looking at which blog posts are like the most viewed?
Yeah, that's our starting point. It's like, it's sort of just like, all right, as we get this channel going, let's repurpose everything we already have. So that's part of it. And then it's also just as we try to figure out like where our sweet spot really is. I mean, there are a lot of really great YouTube channels, like Ahrefs is fantastic. Backlinkos is also great. So we were approaching it like, well, how are we kind of different from them? Or like, what can we do differently that's unique? So we've been trying to just kind of figure that out. And a lot of what I want to focus on is content strategy. My kind of thesis being, if you are somebody who might hire a growth machine, chances are you probably don't want to learn SEO yourself, or you know a little bit about it, or maybe like overall, you just want to know enough to know whether or not it's working or whether or not you're making the right decisions. So a lot of our content is focused on overall content strategy, like things like, how can you create content for your long tail keywords? What are long tail keywords? Should you care about them? Or like, you know, what are the reasons to have a company blog other than SEO? Stuff like that.
I want to shift gears one last time. And when we were discussing what topic you want to talk about, you said, oh, we should talk about Fitbit and this really cool thing that I did. It's a quiz, and I'm curious, what is it so people can know about it? You gave me a link. We'll probably add that in the show notes, but how successful was it as well?
Yeah, so this was the content that I created at Fitbit that I was most proud of. It's a corporate activity challenge generator. That is a mouthful. So when I worked at Fitbit, I was on the B2B side. So B2B for Fitbit, you know, at the time it meant selling devices in bulk and software to HR and benefits leaders so that they could run corporate wellness programs for their employees. So it would be like if, you know, if your company, Ramly, like decided like, let's buy everyone a Fitbit tracker, let's all do step challenges together and like, let's have some friendly competition. So it was that. And the other piece there was kind of zooming out a little bit for a second. It's something I learned pretty early on in content marketing was the power of interactive content and just the notion that people love to learn about themselves. And you can do this with all kinds of interactive content and with quiz funnels in particular. So quiz funnels I really like because it works especially well in e-commerce where, or anytime in a business where you have a product line that requires some level of proficiency in understanding the products so that you can purchase them. So everyone knows how to buy pants. You don't really need education about pants. But for things like makeup, for instance, you can't just go to the store and say, I'll have 4 makeups, please. Like you have to know what you're buying. So for instance, Sephora has a bunch of quizzes where it helps you choose skincare products, helps you figure out a skincare routine, helps you buy lipstick that's in the right shade for your skin type, all that stuff. Another industry this works well in is cannabis. So cannabis is, you know, it's an industry that requires some education. When you're new to cannabis or CBD products, you don't really know what to buy. Should you buy an oil, a gummy, chocolate, whatever? So a quiz funnel like Plus CBD can help you decide, you know, which product works best for you. Now for Fitbit specifically, you know, selling Fitbit devices and software to HR and benefits leaders, this is a savvy audience already. They already know what they're looking for and they already knew what Fitbit was. So they didn't need a quiz that would help them decide which Fitbit tracker. What they needed was something interactive that would help them, be better at their jobs. So instead of a quiz, we did a corporate activity challenge generator and the user, the HR benefits leader, we click through the options like, oh, I want to run an individual challenge, like pit single people against each other. Then I want it to be focused on step count. And then, you know, the generator would kind of like do a little bit of thinking and then would spit out recommendation. And it would say like, do a challenge called to 1 million and beyond where people are rewarded who reach X amount of points when they reach X amount of step counts, stuff like that. And so what's notable about this is that this piece of content, it supports the Fitbit ecosystem. Like it supports the notion of activity trackers and software, but it's also a tool that was standalone. Like technically you didn't really need a Fitbit device to benefit from this piece of content. Technically you could do self-reported activity thresholds. Technically you could use an Apple Watch or a Samsung device or whatever it was. But the whole point of it was you don't need a Fitbit device, but it's better if you do because you have this really great piece of content. So this was something that got a ton of engagement. We had a lot of people in our target audience who just bookmarked the page and they would just keep coming back to it. Like every time they finished a challenge, they would just go back to it like the following month or the following quarter and be like, okay, what's my next challenge? I'm just going to generate it really quick. So that was something that worked really, really well for us and it worked for years to come. Maybe they still even use it. I don't know.
Really fascinating. I find the same thing. I've been learning Spanish recently with Duolingo and just gamifying that whole process is just like so addicting. It's really awesome.
Do you speak Spanish at home now to like try to?
No, that was my, I don't want to call it resolution, but my 2020, one of my 2021 goals is to become fluent in Spanish, but. Yes, maybe soon. Hopefully soon.
Yeah, you can do it.
I want to start wrapping up, and you've talked a lot. Thank you for sharing and being so generous with your time. But if you can give one or two pieces of advice to marketers about content or anything else, what would be those one or two pieces of advice you'd like to give to marketers right now?
Yeah, I think my advice would be when it comes to content marketing, it's always a long game. It just is because a lot of it has to do with brand building. But there's a way to think about content in both short-term and longer-term goals. And your short-term goals, they can't be traffic related. They can't be keyword ranking related because you just don't know how long that part will take. So use the opportunity to create short-term goals by working with other members of your team or other members outside of your marketing department. So taking the opportunity to, you know, create case studies to help your sales team or content that is more educational about your product or about your software to help your customer success team. Those kinds of things can be really impactful for your business. They can help, you know, they can help boost acquisition or conversion, and they can also help drive retention. So I just think it's super important to think about the problems that your content can solve today, and also, you know, how you can look back at the content 1 year from now and think how far we've come as a brand.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and your tips. One final question: where can people find out more about you? Do you want them to, you know, this is your call to action. Do you want them to follow you on Twitter, your LinkedIn, and where can people find out more about Code Machine?
For me personally, you know, I'm on Twitter as Amanda Natt. My personal site is amandanatt.com. And, you know, for Growth Machine, you know, we publish on the blog weekly, the Growth Machine blog. We also have the Growth Machine Marketing Podcast, where Ramley will be a guest very soon. And we also have the Growth Machine YouTube channel, where we, you know, really try to give you tips and helping you to upgrade your overall content marketing strategy.
Yeah, and I got to shout out the YouTube channel. It's pretty dope.
Thank you. People should
definitely check it out.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Ramley.
Well, that's it for this episode. Really blown away. I actually started implementing a lot of the techniques that Amanda suggested in this episode. Once again, if you miss any of those tips, you can download my free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes when I make it easy for you? Just steal mine. Go to growthtoday.fm/132 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of this show. And before I end, I want to once again thank the sponsor for this episode. They make this show happen and sponsor like the marketing tools and the hosting of the show, so I can get amazing guests like Amanda that you and I can learn from. Thanks to LinkedIn. Now LinkedIn is an undiscovered goldmine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive criteria that you will not find anywhere else, such as company growth rate, job seniority, job titles, skills, and more. So whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, and build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. Now, for you, my listeners, you get $100 free credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. Get it for free at linkedin.com/growtoday. Please also support me. There's three easy ways. First, you can share a quote about Amanda's episode here on Twitter or LinkedIn. I make it easy for you. You can also tell a friend about this episode. Second, join the Grow Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you, so you don't have to keep downloading it on the site. Third, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I would really appreciate that. If you listen this far and you really enjoy the show, leaving a review will get more people to hear about the show. And I would really, really send you lots of love and kisses. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.